I'm always amazed at the recall that some of these former players, former coaches have, things that took place in the 50s or 60s, even in the 80s at this point, that are still vivid memories, like it was yesterday. A recent interview with Gene Stallings, he was part of our KTRS Radio Legends series, St. Louis Legends. He coached the Big Red, but beyond that, coached at Alabama, played for Bear Bryant in college, and then his son Johnny, who had Down syndrome, became really the face for a lot of folks of Down syndrome and families raising these kids and how special their lives can be. And Gene Stallings and his son Johnny became well known. There was a book. So he's been connected to a lot of different things. He's 86, and I think I might have said this in the interview. Brendan Weese from KTRS, we did it, the interview together. And I said, if you didn't know Gene Stallings was from Texas and you just had this man on the phone, it would take about 2 seconds and you'd say, this guy's from Texas. He just sounds it through and through. Still lives in Paris, Texas. I think there was a movie called Paris, Texas. Was there not? I could really go down an old Wikipedia rabbit hole here. Nonetheless, I'll do that later. Still lives in Paris, Texas. He had just gotten off his tractor when we talked to him. He's 86. Immediately on the phone call, talks about St. Louis. He said, you say hi to Carol Buck for me. And then later in the interview, talking about his St. Louis time, which was relatively brief, 2 years. He was the head coach of the football Cardinals as they made the move to Arizona. And it was a time when everyone knew it was possible, but nobody really knew where Bill Bidwell was taking the team. We've heard stories. They went to the NFL offices and went into one room where they talked to folks from Baltimore, then walked down the hall, talked to people from Arizona, and nobody knew what the hell was going to happen. Gene Stallings was the head coach, and they go to Arizona, and he tells a great story about telling Bidwell that he's going to make it easy on him and finish the season, and when the season's done, he'll step aside and let him move on and find a new coach. And he said, I got fired the next day with 6 games to go. But also when talking about St. Louis, he remembered his son, Johnny, who had Down syndrome and would go to Cardinal baseball games, not Cardinal football, but baseball. And he said, Jack Buck, of course, legendary for his charitable efforts and just a great human being. He would have Johnny sit in the booth. And I think that's my favorite part of this whole interview. I love the Bear Bryant stories, what it's like to be the head coach at Alabama. But when he tells the story about Johnny getting into the booth with Jack Buck and how on the way home, his son would say, here's the pitch. And Gene Stallings actually kind of kicked into a Jack Buck imitation. I think that was my favorite part. So I really think you'll enjoy it. He's just a very pleasant man who's accomplished a lot in the football world. Didn't have a ton of success with the football Cardinals. That goes without saying. And that also qualifies for almost everybody who'd been the head coach of the football Cardinals. But really fascinating man. Even going way back to his college days at Texas A&M, Bear Bryant took over the program when he was there. And the Junction Boys, they went on a training camp for the ages where I guess Bear Bryant whipped them into shape. It became a book. It became a movie. We talked about that as well. So Gene Stallings is the focus of the Kilcoin Conversation. I really think you'll enjoy it. What a pleasant man. And when people get older, you're not always sure how well the interview is going to go. Sometimes the memory's not great, but I was not only pleasantly surprised, but sort of at the end of the interview, I wished I had gotten to know the man. And I wasn't around him when he was here, but really found him to be, and also up to date on his football. Follows Texas A&M, follows Alabama, was talking about the Arkansas coach, and he really likes that Sam Pittman, the job he's doing. So he's still following the college game on a regular basis. So here it is, Gene Stallings. It's presented, as always, by the great sponsors, which include B&G Tuck Pointing, the best in the bricks. And I was thinking about this walking into Busch Stadium the other night. A lot of bricks there. If they ever need any tuck pointing or foundation repair, they should call Rich Galati and the team at B&G because they really are the best in the bricks. Make it look new. Your garage, your home, your chimney, they know all about tuck pointing, waterproofing, foundation repair. Get yourself a free estimate and simply check out their work at bgtuckpointing.com. Also, appliance discounters, the great GE products. Get them for the lowest prices at one spot here in the greater St. Louis area, which includes a giant warehouse, which means when you go to the showroom, you're going to get your merchandise delivered quickly. Don't wait months. How about a couple of days? for that new washer, stove, refrigerator, dryer. And GE Rebates makes it even cheaper. Appliance discounters, make sure you get the best prices, get it delivered quickly. It's all about the great service. TheAppliancediscounters.com. Their savings are your savings. Marie Davila, Senior Living, can't wait till we see the fountains turn red for a little Cardinal playoff. Hopefully beyond, I was going to say playoffs, but we got one game first. And Fred and Mary Kay, so festive out there at Marie Davila. The fountains will turn red, I guarantee it, for next week. Hopefully it'll be a red October. Marie Davila, Senior Living, take a virtual tour at mariedavila.com. And Triad Bank, the St. Louis-based bank, started in 2005. Five-star rated bank, so if you're looking for a car loan, home loan, maybe you're a business owner looking to expand, talk to Jim Regna, the CEO, anybody on the team over there. Do what a lot of folks in St. Louis have been doing. Do business with Triad Bank. It's St. Louis people making the decisions right here in our town. They're located in Frontenac on Clayton Road and on the web at triadbanking.com. Here now, Gene Stallings.
Listen, it's a joy to be, anytime I can talk to the people in St. Louis. I love St. Louis when I was coaching there. And be sure, in case I forget it, be sure and tell Carol Buck that I said hello.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, she is royalty in this town and still is. Well, let's start with that. Your time in St. Louis, I know it was sort of turbulent because the team was getting ready to move and then ultimately moved to Phoenix. But what are your recollections there at the old Busch Stadium?
Well, I enjoyed coaching St. Louis. Now, it's a baseball town. There's no question about that. They loved the baseball Cardinals and just tolerated the football Cardinals when I was there. They've done a little bit better since then in Phoenix. But as far as living in St. Louis, I felt like it was a well-kept secret. Unless you've been in St. Louis, you didn't really realize what a great place it was to live.
And how turbulent was it, knowing that the move was impending? I know there was some thought they might go to Baltimore. They weren't sure if it was there or to go into Phoenix. Give me an idea of coaching in the midst of all that.
Had absolutely nothing to say about where we went. That was Mr. Bidwell's team, and he made the decisions, and he would go off and visit from place to place, and everybody would want to know where he went. And I really didn't make me any difference because I was going to be coaching the football team, I thought, for a long time. But anyway, it was my job to please him. It wasn't his job to please me, and I just couldn't do it.
And were players ever distracted by it? Was it ever a topic in the room?
Yeah, that was about, you know, and when I was coaching the Cowboys, everybody, all the football players of the Dallas lived in the Dallas area. When I was coaching St. Louis Cardinals, nobody lived there. So I told the players one time in a meeting, I said, I'd like some guys to live in St. Louis. It's a good place to live, and that's your business. Where you live is my business, who makes football team. And all of a sudden, several players felt like it was a good place to live and bought houses. And lo and behold, we didn't move to Phoenix, but the organization did buy the houses, so they didn't lose any money on their house.
Just when you got them to buy in, they packed up and left. And then to be a coach of a team that moves, you guys like having sort of a rhythm to the day and structure. How disruptive is that when you are the head coach?
Well, it wasn't all that disruptive, really. Now, we had an abandoned high school to practice in, had all the meeting rooms, had the gym, and had their old practice area, which wasn't an excellent field, wasn't like what they have now. But it could have been a whole lot worse. It was worse in St. Louis. We didn't have very good facilities in St. Louis. But in Phoenix, they were okay.
We're visiting with Gene Stallings, part of our St. Louis Legend Series here on the Big 550 KTRS. Coach, do you remember a game in 1987 against the Bucks where the Big Red trailed 28-3 heading into the fourth quarter and you guys rallied for a win?
Yeah, biggest comeback in the history of the NFL at that time. We were playing Tampa, and we came back, and my friend Ray Perkins was coaching Tampa. So anyway, I had a little good time kidding him about it later on.
And you came from Dallas where you had been for a long time on the defensive side. That's a legendary franchise. You're there with Tom Landry and I'm sure Gil Brandt, Tex Schramm, that whole team upstairs. What was that run like for a Texas guy to be part of that Cowboys dynasty?
Well, first of all, you just can't imagine. Your wildest imagination, you can't imagine how knowledgeable Coach Landry was in football. He understood all phases of the game, offense, defense, kicking game. In fact, when I joined the organization, he critiqued every practice reel. He would go from the defensive back to the offensive back, wide receivers, defensive linemen. He would critique every practice reel. Now, I remember telling him one time, I said, "Now, Coach, if you want the players to listen to me, they've got to hear me every once in a while." So he said, "Well, you think you could do it?" And I said, "Well, I've been head coach for 7 years. I think I can handle the secondary." And so he came into my meeting room 3 days in a row just to make sure that I knew what I was talking about. He was that thorough and that knowledgeable about all phases of the game.
Did he ever take off the hat when you guys were just sitting around having film room?
Well, he didn't wear the hat in the building, as far as I can remember. And he would just as soon play golf with some of his coaches as he would the President of the United States. He wasn't the least bit pretentious about anything. He was a good man. He was a president of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and I'm still a little upset with the Cowboys the way they treated Coach Landry.
Yeah, that was an unceremonious end after a great run. Give people an idea, the star power in that town. I mean, and you had Roger Staubach, and you had Drew Pearson and Tony Dorsett. I mean, just massively huge superstars. What was it like to be in that town and to be a part of the Cowboys? I mean, they were rock stars, weren't they?
Well, the first time that I went into a meeting with the Cowboys, I was sitting beside one of the players, and he was a great big player. I'm not going to tell you which one. I'd been in college football all my life, and all of a sudden I'm in the pros, and we're having sort of a mini camp, and Bob Lilly was smoking a cigar in the meeting room, I mean, in his locker. And I said, "Bob, what are you doing?" He said, "I'm smoking a cigar." So I got thinking, you 6'7", 285, you can sort of do what you wanted to. But that was sort of my introduction into professional football as opposed to college football.
Coach, your start in big time football was with Bear Bryant at the University of Alabama. We talk about Coach Landry. What was it like working for Bear Bryant?
Well, I've had a blessed career. If you look at all the college coaches and you'd say, who's the best college coach? It's got to be Coach Bryant. Now, I know Coach Saban has a better win-loss record, but he recruits all over the United States. He's got better people than other people. When I was working for Coach Bryant, the great, great majority of our players were from the state of Alabama. He wanted somebody who grew up in Alabama, loved Alabama, wanted to beat Auburn, and wanted to get ready to beat Tennessee. So the quality of player, we had good players, but not anything like what Alabama has now.
Well, and your introduction to Bear Bryant, he was your college coach, Texas A&M, but became legendary. The Junction Boys, there was a book, there was a movie. Take us back. So he's trying to build up a program, and I don't know if he said you guys aren't tough enough, but he said, I am going to take you guys out into the hills. We're going to get tough. How vivid are those memories?
Those are very vivid, and the only cute thing that happened at Junction, this was a Saturday night. We were beat down. We were just beat down. I mean, it was just contact every drill against each other, and players were leaving, and it wasn't many of us left, and this was a squad meeting on Saturday night. Coach Bryant walked in the meeting room, and he said, tomorrow's Sunday. How many of you guys like to go to church? And boy, we all threw our hands up. He had the manager write us down. I said, Troy, I said, get my name. I go to church. He said, Beef, I'll get you in. And so anyway, he headed the list, Coach Bryant, and he said, isn't this nice? Everybody want to go to church? We're going to go right after we practice.
Oh, you guys thought you were getting out of practice, didn't you?
Yeah, we thought we won't get out of practice. But he made us go to church because we had to sign. We signed up and wanted to go. So anyway, when all the things that happened at Junction, that sticks out in my mind more than anything.
And it was the movie, the book, all those things were fairly accurate?
Well, it was semi. You know, it was still a movie. And Jim Dent wrote the book, and I guess he had something to do with the movie. The movie, they had the guy that was portraying Coach Bryant. can't even think, but mercy of searches. Anyway, he did not do a good job, in my opinion, of portraying Coach Bryant. Couldn't anybody, really. And maybe John Wayne could have, but...
Tom Berenger.
Gary Busey.
Oh, Busey.
Gary Busey was the guy that played Coach Bryant in the first movie. Yeah, and they might have made another one, but Gary Busey played Coach Bryant. In fact, he was... I said, now, Gary, you need to have Mrs. Bryant on your side. And she doesn't think anybody can play Coach Bryant, but you're going to play. You need her help. She knows what happens, and she can tell you things that the average person can't tell you. Now, he's going to meet with Mrs. Bryant. And I said, now, you need to wear an alligator shoes and have a nice jacket on and just look nice when you go in and meet her. Well, he met her, and he had shoes with no socks. He had a jacket with no, just a T-shirt on it, no coat and tie at all. And just really, in my opinion, turned Miss Bryant off. So she didn't help at all in that movie.
Hmm. So you played for Bear Bryant at Texas A&M, and then when you get to Alabama, you'd been an assistant there, but when you get the head coaching job, this is, of course, after your time with the Big Red, the football Cardinals, is it still daunting to coach the Crimson Tide, even though at that point Bear Bryant had been gone? Is it still intimidating to step into that role?
Well, now, he was there when my Texas A&M team played Alabama in the Cotton Bowl. And obviously they were a better football team than we were, but I wanted my players to be exposed to Coach Bryant. Back in those days when you went to a bowl game, both teams did things together and both coaches would speak to both teams and so forth and so on. So I wanted the players to be exposed to Coach Bryant. And that's the reason that I was wanting to play Alabama. Obviously, we won the game, but they had a better football team than we did. But we got several turnovers, and that's the difference in the game.
And then taking the job at Alabama, how big was the shadow of Bear Bryant on that campus?
Did not intimidate me at all. I love Coach Bryant. I told more Coach Bryant stories than anybody. Coach Bryant was my hero. But I was coaching the team, and I was going to coach it the way that I felt like it needed to be coached. So I was not intimidated by we would win a game when I was at Alabama, and somebody would write me a letter and say, congratulations, but Coach Bryant would have done this and that. So they loved Coach Bryant. They just tolerated the rest of us.
Mm. Coach, you know, here in St. Louis, there are certain rivalries, whether it's the baseball Cardinals and the Cubs. In college, maybe it's Mizzou and Kansas. What was it like to be a part of the Alabama-Auburn rivalry? How intense is it?
Yes, you just can't imagine how big it was. Now, the reason the Texas A&M-Texas game was a big rivalry, but we talked about it the week before the game and the week after the game, and that's it. But the Alabama-Auburn game, somebody somewhere is going to be talking about it every day of the year. I mean, you can be in a restaurant or a cafe or whatever you're going to be, two or three guys around there, and they're going to be talking about the Alabama-Auburn game. So that it makes that rivalry extremely big.
Gene Stallings, our guest, head coach of the Big Red here in St. Louis, national championship down in Alabama, one of the sports legends here in our town, presented by Royal Banks of Missouri. And Gene, winning a national title at Alabama, it's one thing to say I coached at Alabama, but to be in that small club of winning a national championship, what did that mean to you in 92?
Well, it meant that I had been accepted. You know, when you're at Alabama, Coach Bryant set the bar extremely high. First of all, you had to beat Tennessee, and you had to beat Auburn. If you can't beat those two teams, you're not going to stay around very long. Then to win a national championship at Alabama just puts you in a different category. Not over, obviously, Coach Saban has won a lot of them. But in those days, by winning the national championship at Alabama, you felt like that you had been accepted, that you had earned your spurs. And I was extremely happy when we did win it. We were an underdog playing Miami. Anybody that would listen, which very few people did, I would tell them we were the best football team, but Miami had won the national championship the year before. They had all of them coming back. They were undefeated, and they were a good football team, but they hadn't played Alabama yet.
And then, Gene, of course, you make a lot of headlines for the work you did with your son, Mark John, and a lot of promotional campaigns and the connection with people raising kids with Down syndrome. Tell me how that storyline, because it's a personal thing, but it became very public for you and your family, and I sense that that was really important to you, your wife, and all your kids.
It was, and Johnny was a guru that held us all together. He was at every game, and, you know, he couldn't spell cat. But he knew the name of every player, every manager, every person that worked in the athletic department. In fact, the athletic training room is named the John Mark Stallings training room right now. So he made his impact, and he loved the players, and he thought anybody could coach. And one of my cute favorite stories about Johnny. He had a little friend named Bradley Block, who also had Downs, and Bradley would come to the ranch and visit with us a couple of weeks every year. And so I got just the three of us. We're at a little country restaurant, and I said, okay, Bradley, you and Johnny, who is your all-time favorite Alabama football coach? Both of them said Coach Saban. I said, Johnny, he hadn't even coached a game yet. I said, your old daddy coached there for a while. He said, you're not there now.
how impressed were you at the impact in these big, tough kids, you know, that could lift 500 pounds or whatever, and then they'd see little Johnny and it'd melt their heart and kind of brought up maybe the human side of people that we don't always see in sports?
That's right, and he loved the player, and he loved the managers and trainers. He felt like anybody could coach, but couldn't anybody take care of the player? So if you were a manager or a trainer, Johnny felt like you were at the top of the list. And like I say, he would go in the training room, and they would let him put a little ice on the players from time to time, and he felt like he was a part of it. And everywhere I've been, it's not so much at when I was coaching the Cardinals, even though they let him go at the game, but he was really a part of the organization. I will say this, when I was coaching the St. Louis Cardinals, the Phoenix Cardinals, we had what we call first down for downs. And every time that the Cardinals made a first down, people would contribute so much money. Say businesses would maybe give $5 or $10 every time they made a first down, and it went for the Down Syndrome Association there in Phoenix.
Well, if people didn't know that Gene Stallings was from Texas, they just need to hear the voice. You can hear the Texas in Gene Stallings. In fact, you still live in the Paris, Texas area, right? A big ranch, and you told us you just got off the tractor before this interview, still going strong, and tell us what the daily life is like now for Gene Stallings.
Well, I'm 86 years old, so I'm slowing down just a little bit, but I do a radio show every Thursday, so I keep in touch with what's happening in the college games. Because of the virus and so forth, I haven't been to any games, but you can sit on television and you can watch 6-7 games, and then I comment on them when I do the radio show. So I stay as involved as I can, and it's just a joy to watch the big games. I mean, the big game this week, in my opinion, is going to be Georgia and Arkansas. Arkansas is an up-and-coming team. Georgia is a good football team. I had a grandson that played for Clemson. So obviously I keep in touch with Clemson, and Dabo Swinney played for me when I was coaching at Alabama. So the three teams that I keep up with, Clemson, and then I keep up with Alabama and Texas A&M.
We're visiting with Coach Gene Stallings here, our St. Louis Legends series on the Big 550 KTRS. Coach, you mentioned you're keeping in touch with the game. Is there a coach out there right now that reminds you of Gene Stallings?
I think the coach at Arkansas.
Yeah.
I mean, last year I thought Arkansas was the worst college team I've seen in years and years. They are a good football team now. And it seemed to me like that coach is in charge of his team, and he does an excellent job. Dabo at Clemson, he mimics me from time to time and likes to tell stories and things that I'd done. But as far as just looking out without knowing anything about them, I'm sort of impressed with that Arkansas coach.
And when you look at the Big Red, a lot of us that watch those teams, there was always talent, you know. And, of course, your era, there was still Neil Lomax and Roy Green. And then O.J. Anderson had come through. And then you had Stump Mitchell. There were always good players, even earlier than that, with the Jim Harts and Terry Metcalf and Mel Gray. But it felt like, as a franchise, they could never quite get over the hump. Did you have that sense when you were there as well, that they had good players, but it just never quite came together?
Well, all we had to do was win a couple of games, and we'd make the playoffs. And Mr. Bedville, it seemed like every day they were writing, when are they going to renew my contract? And, I've been there 4 years, and Mr. Bedville said he wanted to see me coach another game. So it was obvious to me that he wanted somebody else to be his coach. And so I called a press conference, and I said, now, when this season is over, I'm no longer a candidate for this job. This will give Mr. Bedville at least 6 weeks during the season to find who he wants to, and what I want to do is get the Cardinals in the playoff. Fired me the next day, and the Cardinals lost 6 in a row, and so I don't know whether I should have said anything about it, but I thought I was doing him a favor, and obviously I wasn't.
Well, it could be worse. I think Jim Hanifin said they changed the locks on him at halftime. He said he went to his office and he couldn't get in.
Well, Jim Hanifin was there. I followed him for a while.
Yep.
He was an outstanding young man, and I guess he's still alive. I hadn't been in contact with him for a long time.
Yeah, just recently passed, in fact. But a character, a great storyteller up until his final days. He's also a St. Louis sports legend, and he has a million funny Bidwell stories. Other than the big comeback, is there an NFL game, maybe even in your time as an assistant coach in Dallas, a favorite?
You know, when I was coaching the Cowboys, I mean the Cardinals, we beat Dallas in Dallas, and Mr. Bedville, for some reason, he wanted to beat Dallas bad, and we beat him, and then we won another game there in Phoenix. That was a big win for us, and so anyway, we had several wins that were important wins.
Coach, what did you think of coaching at Busch Stadium?
Well, it was a football stadium, and and when we would practice. Now, this is hard to believe, you're an NFL team, but we'd have to put down tape to run out the 5-yard line and 10-yard line and 20-yard line, just stretch out some tape, because it was a baseball facility. And
right,
they had the first kiss at the pig, really. So we were just using their facility, and I appreciated them letting us use it. But we needed a practice area that had grass and had a chance to get a grass field, and Mr. Bedwin nixed it in for whatever reason, but it was going to be maybe a 5-minute bus drive to this facility where we're going to get it, but we never did get it.
Well, and you mentioned Carroll Buck. Would you have crossed paths with Jack Buck and Whitey Herzog, some larger than life figures here in our town?
I do. Jack Buck was a dear friend, and Joe Buck has done an outstanding job commentating. He covers lots of Cowboy games, and I have not run across him, but I watch him on television, and I remember back when he was a little bitty rascal, and Jack Buck was one of the few people that was bilingual. He could do a game in Spanish just as easily as he could in English, and Johnny would go to the baseball games, and Jack would, he would set up in the Jack's Buck, his box, And he would let Johnny say, now here's a pitch. You know, Jack Buck was sort of famous for, here's a pitch. And so Johnny would say the same thing on television every once in a while, here's a pitch.
Oh, that is so cool. I can picture it. I mean, that's such a Jack Buck moment. And he, you know, not only baseball, but he also got involved with Cardinal broadcasts. And a weird piece of trivia, too, Gene, is that Jack Buck was the original Blues announcer in our town for hockey, and he said they didn't have anybody else, they made me do it, and he didn't know much about hockey, but a little bit of trivia. So the kid from Paris, Texas, if I told you, hey, you're going to end up coaching in the NFL, winning a national title at Alabama, would you believe that years ago?
I would not. I went to Texas A&M, and it was a military school. I didn't know it till I got down there. There was no co-eds or anything. And we had a coach by the name of Ray George, and then they fired him and hired this guy named Paul Bryan. Didn't any of us know anything about him? We didn't. Back in that part of the country, if it wasn't the Southwest Conference, we didn't know anything about it. And anyway, they hired Coach Bryan, so he's going to have a meeting at the Grove there in the A&M campus. And Coach Bryan took his, I remember, he took his jacket off and threw it down, took his tie off and took it off. And I tell you, he impressed us from the day one. So it wasn't long before we all knew who he was.
Coach, when your team won the national championship in 1992, you won the Paul Bear Bryant Award. Did that have special meaning to you, being your relationship?
Yes, it did. I've got that trophy in my house as we speak, and I've won it a couple of times. And the two trophies look just like the Coach Bryan and with his hat on. And he just, it was just a joy to work for Coach Bryan. The players felt like by having him on our sideline, it was worth 12, 14 points. Now, our X's and O's weren't any better than anybody else's X's and O's, but our players thought they were. Now, when I was working for the Cowboys, our X's and O's were better than anybody else's X's and O's. Coach Landry was just knowledgeable on all phases of the game, and it was a joy to work for both those guys. And those are the only two coaches I've ever worked for.
Coach, you're up to date on the sport today. Do you like the game of football now as much as you did when you were actively coaching?
No, I don't. I don't like the idea that if you don't like the coach, you can just transfer. You know, you go to school for an education. You don't go to school to play football. You go to school for an education, and while you're getting it, you try to play football. But now we're turning it around. We go to school to play football because if we don't like who's the coach or who's ahead of us, we just transfer. And it just turns me wrong because somewhere along the line, I used to tell my players, I said, if you want to please me, you just graduate. And I can't tell you how many of them that the mothers or daddies would say, this first one ever on either side of the family to ever go to college. Help him with his books. Didn't say anything about making a good football player. Just help him with his books. That's primarily at Alabama more so than at A&M. But to see that player graduate was a great thrill for me.
Well, Coach, great to talk to you. I love these. I'm going to text Joe Buck and say he was called a little rascal by Gene Stallings back in the day. Great stories, and what a fascinating career. You sound like you're in great health, and it's so much fun to hear your voice here in St. Louis. Thanks for being with us.
Listen, it's a joy to be on your show and holler any time that I can help. And like I say, I'm sort of knowledgeable about who's playing who. And this week we've got several big games. Now, I want to say this. Texas A&M, we felt like was going to have an outstanding team. And up in Bowles, they didn't lose to Arkansas. They were talking about how they were going to beat Alabama. So I sort of doubt if that's going to happen.
Coach, have you gotten to see any Mizzou games? We do the Mizzou games.
I have not gone to a game at all. You know what the virus, the way it is, and I'm 86 years old, and you can't go to a game without going by 40,000-50,000 people.
Right.
If you don't sit by them, you walk by them going into the stadium and so forth, and so I've had my shots and all that, but I just feel like it's to my advantage not to put myself in that situation. I miss going to the games. I've had several opportunities. The game that I'd really like to see this year is A&M in Alabama. I've had several opportunities to go, but I'm not going to do it.
And I said this in the intro. I'm always amazed at the recall, the memory. Boy, the Bidwell firing him after he said, you know, at the end of the season, I'll step aside. Well, okay, so much for that. And then again, if you get fired from the NFL in that manner, you're probably not going to forget that. But also following the local game and keeping an eye on Alabama and A&M and the SEC, and I'm sure the Big 12 has still interest for him. So that was a lot of fun. Thanks to Mark Dorsey, the team over at KTRS, allowing me to share it on this platform. Sometimes there's a great interview that happens, and I always think, boy, I hope people caught that. I texted Joe and Julie Buck after it was over, and I said, we were talking to Gene Stallings, and I said, right out of the gate, there's a Carol Buck shout-out. And a little bit later, I think there was another Carol Buck shout-out, and it brought some smiles to their face. I hope you enjoyed it. The Kilcoin Conversation, we're going to get into a little baseball next week. We've got a couple things down the road. Kyle Turley, fascinating as always on football and life. He and I could talk forever, and we've got a segment that we'll be putting out soon. So remember to subscribe at iTunes, Spotify, all the material available at ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, the great website by the Cardinals broadcaster Dan McLaughlin. He's having a lot of fun during this Cardinal late season run. ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. All of our great sponsors, make sure you let them know that you listen to our content. If you're in the market for a new bank, or maybe you should be, check out Triad Bank, St. Louis-based. TriadBanking.com. In the market for appliances, any type of appliance, all the biggest names at the lowest prices. It's a great formula. And these are great St. Louis people as well. Denise Bradley, her husband John, he was a retired police officer. And she said, we're getting in the appliance business. She had been in it with her family. And she said, we're doing this. He said, we are. And it's been a big hit. TheAppliancedDiscounters.com. Check out all the great merchandise. B&G Tuckpointing, and they are the best in the bricks. Make your bricks look their best. BGTuckPointing.com. Rich Galati, his daughters, Bella, Gabrielle, that's the B and the G. You can tell it is a family business. And Marie Davila, corner of Clayton and Wideman Road, senior living, the spot since 1960 to retire. MarieDavila.com is where you can take a virtual tour. I'm Martin Kilcoin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you again soon.